When I made the decision to live a monastic life, it was a choice to be vulnerable, to be helpless. I didn't know that at the time, but I learned. Even the way we tie our robe, we're always having to hold it together. If you've ever sailed a boat, you know you're always supposed to hang on to the ship with one hand and use the other hand to work. That's why you're called a hand, because you only have one free hand. So in monastic practice, I can really only use one hand completely, because with the other hand, I always have to hold on to the folded robe. The metaphor is that I'm always holding on to my training. We have more than 300 training rules, but they give us direction on every aspect of our lives. And that's what it means to train. How to speak, how to walk, how to hold the bowl, how to wear the robe, how to interact with those elder in the robe or those outside the monastery. How to speak on the Dhamma. Much restraint and mindfulness is needed, and that's the beauty of the practice. We get refined in our awareness in different conditions and contexts, and that gives us a powerful inner sanctuary, which is free and clear. And of course, foremost is our commitment to sila, to morality. It's everything. We know that if we're not mindful, if we're distracted by sense pleasure, or we step over the boundaries of our vows, we lose our connection to that inner sanctuary, and our ship may run aground, and we may hurt ourselves morally. But if we are careful and dedicated to the path, we protect our Dhamma vehicle and it will carry us well. Faith and wisdom help us to steer and grow our spiritual wings. After 10 years, I could experiment to go on my own and live as a hermit, dependent on the kindness of others. But it turned out to be a real test of my faith. I didn't have the support that I was used to in the monastery. Being on my own and not getting the requisites nor the meals at times, it forced a deep questioning of my ability to endure. But it also strengthened my commitment to reach for something greater than just satisfying the senses or getting what I thought would be enough. I began giving up the world in a new way, in a deeper way. So I had to learn the deep meaning of sacrifice, patience, and endurance, patient endurance. These all seem to converge into that deep wish to realize the truth. And for me, this summoned me to do more than I ever thought I could. When I started, I never thought about all this. I just put one foot in front of the other. And the path really rose up. It rose up in front of me. And just as when you begin the practice, you stay focused in one moment, this moment. And that really serves much more than trying to hasten the practice. But just being present moment by moment, that's all we really need. Pay attention. This moment's purification, being aware of what is coming up in the heart, focusing on that, watching, cultivating the conditions for being present and letting go again and again and again. And that fosters our courage, our momentum, our endurance to go through difficulty. Whatever comes, we have no control. Or it can stir up fear, confusion, a sense of painful memories coming up, or weakness of the body, or discouragement. So many things can come up, but also joy and more courage to keep going. Today, we all stood in the labyrinth, a very amazing place, filled with intricate passages and blind alleys. It's a maze. Very complex. It's almost torturous, the design of it. And we can get so frustrated trying to find the way out. We are in a spiritual labyrinth. It's a great metaphor, the labyrinth of the mind. We have to really find our way through. How do we find our way out of our predicament? Especially when the obstacles, the hindrances are constantly pushing through to help us lose our way and drag us back into the realm of sense pleasure or aversion to painful experiences, or to doubts, worries, fears, anxieties, restlessness, sleepiness, or mental fog. All these combine to make it feel like a torture, but actually it's a test of our endurance, and it can have really important fruit, the most important being the knowledge of truth. Because these tests teach us the Four Noble Truths. They are noble because they are universal for all of humanity. And they are timeless. They govern every age, every epoch. And they point us to reality, to waking up. Yes, to our awakening. So what are these? The first one is suffering. We have to know that there is suffering, and it has an origin. And this suffering also comes to an end. It ceases. And this truth of the cessation of suffering can be experienced by each and every one of us, right here within the heart, if we follow this path of cultivating virtue, stilling the mind formations, and coming to an inner state of peace and wise insight into our true nature that arises out of that mental ocean of wisdom. The ending of suffering does not happen through sense pleasure or from being rich, powerful, successful with worldly achievements. No, it comes through the fulfillment of this ancient, noble path. That means that we watch, we witness, we test these Four Noble Truths to experience them directly for ourselves. It has to be direct from within. When we listen to the silence within us to see how our experience of present moment awareness knows and explores consciousness so that we see the truth for ourselves. We ask questions. We inquire. And we're not following a dogma here or a belief system, but a practical teaching. And that's why we call it practice. Practice and liberation. E pasiko, o panaiko. We come and see for ourselves by studying our own hearts, and we gain the wisdom from that. We're not just sitting here fruitlessly, just as an endurance test, though it might feel like that. It might feel dark or unbearable. But there comes a moment when we sit through the pain without wishing it would go away. We just make friends with it. We soften it. Softening. Not grasping it, not pushing, resisting, being scared of it. Just knowing it, accepting it, approaching it, looking at it, asking, what is it? What is it? And we peel away the delusion to know it directly. You know how you peel an onion? What happens when you peel an onion? You start to cry. But when you peel away the layers of delusion of pain, we're either going to cry from the process of peeling, or we're going to cry from our incredulity, disbelief at what we find. Oh my goodness, what a discovery. Because it's empty. It's not what we think it is. How can it be what we think? What we experience is raw. It's impermanent. It's painful. It hurts. And it's not what we are, what we truly are. We sit silently to watch and witness peace. It might be only for one moment of peace, but that is a moment of holiness, and no one can take that from us. No one can understand that either who has not experienced it for themselves. That's how we go through the labyrinth of the mind, not being fooled by all the obstacles or by the complexity, not being disheartened. Sure, we lose heart. Sure, we get fed up. Sure, we feel crushed, lost, unworthy. But we keep pulling ourselves back up and trying again and again and again, tirelessly. And so this is heroic effort. It's not an ordinary effort. If we have only ordinary effort, you get ordinary results. But if we give it our best, see what happens. It's a courageous, extraordinary effort. We might get an extraordinary result. But we don't hope for that. We don't hope for any result. We just experience the moment. And we get to the stillness, the center point within the heart. Just like in the middle of that labyrinth, when we all came together and suddenly we weren't separate anymore. We were a circle, a point at the edge of where we live in the vast expanse of Canada, North America, on the western side of the Atlantic Ocean, or wherever you are on the planet Earth, orbiting around the sun in the cosmos. That's us. There we are. But we have to get through the labyrinth of the mind to reach that still point within us. Now, we know that's not torture. That's freedom. There's a very lovely sutta in which the angel comes to the Buddha and says to the Buddha that he's caught in this predicament of feeling lost, not knowing whether to go up or down or which way, feeling the danger of the path and so afraid. And he asks the Buddha, "What should I do? Oh Lord, please tell me the way out. What is the escape from this?" Even the devas get scared, feel shipwrecked, and unable to continue. And the advice that the Buddha gave was this: not apart from awakening and austerity, not apart from restraint, not apart from relinquishing everything, do I see any safety for human beings. This is for everyone, not just for the devas. The real escape, the real ending of this torture, comes not from running away from it, not from saying, "I've had enough." No. We stay. We stay here to realize the perfection of this path, to know the third and fourth noble truths. We've known, we understand there is suffering, and we may know the origin of it now. Third truth, we want to find the cessation of that suffering. And we do this by waking up through developing wisdom and release. And that means freedom from attachment. So we have to take a risk. It may be uncomfortable, and we're not used to bearing discomfort. When you have a headache, there's a pill. When we're hungry, we eat. When it's cold, we turn up the heat. When it's hot, we have the air conditioner. We live pretty comfortably. It's ironic that the freedom of suffering lies in going not towards what gives us comfort, but in going through this seemingly torturous labyrinth of the mind and coming to that still refined point, mysterious, invisible, but it's there. And that's the freedom in the heart. For most of us, when we're suffering, we wouldn't just sit there and bear it. We would look for relief. Our culture is to run away from pain. But through developing wisdom, we can understand the path that helps us to let go. So we sit with our experience and we try to work our way slowly through this labyrinth to that stillness. We might get there for one moment. And what we want to try to do is sustain that. That's a lifetime practice. It might be slow and disentangling because we're caught in so many ways. But if we can learn to pull the barnacles that stick to us, that we cling to, then we'll get there. People ask me, "What is this meditation all about?" And I try to tell them about the Four Noble Truths, about suffering. And they say, "I'm not suffering." First, we have to recognize that there is suffering. Otherwise, we don't even begin the discovery of the ending of suffering. Just being born, being vulnerable to injury, to sickness, to war, to disaster, to death, not to mention old age, there's so much suffering in this world. And when we contemplate the course of life, we can question this, am I suffering? Do we experience mental or physical pain? Of course. How can we face our death? We're so afraid. So we return to that still center of inner refuge, that place of safety where wisdom arises and morality is perfected, where the mind can rest. When the heart feels at ease and we cultivate the path to know that, to experience it. The highest gift is this kind of attention to the present moment. Present moment awareness and clearing out the rubbish in the heart. It's the greatest form of generosity. And the perfection of virtue, because it's from the pure heart that we can practice purity of speech and the highest form of ethical conduct for daily living. That's a process. And that's how even our thoughts become grounded in wholesomeness. So, our moral imperative is to live with sensitivity, with an attitude of not harming, taking care of ourselves and each other and the world we live in. That's how we can leave a wholesome footprint in this world. We protect our virtuous thought by meditation. We develop ethical speech and conduct, and we protect our interconnection. We're not separate. And then we come back to the world having chipped away some of the dross of our lives by growing and protecting our inner purity and deepening our understanding, our wisdom. And we protect our environment. The ethical footprint that we're making begins with pure presence, and it's vast. So just consider what we're doing here is not different from what we need to do in the world. We have to live this teaching, this practice, day in and day out. We have a moral responsibility to carry this practice into our daily lives, to be truthful, to treat each breath with this present moment awareness so that we can know it as it truly is and live the truth of this presence in the ocean of wisdom. Even diving down into the breath, we can realize the still point within the heart and understand what governs all conditioned phenomena, every pain that passes through. If we can stay with one breath, with one moment of pain, we can know the ending of pain. That's how we live the Four Noble Truths. But we have to go towards that pain. Not owning it, but just knowing. What do we know? We know the pain as impermanent. And in that pain, the whole mystery of life arises and ceases. Because you think it's one thing, but then when you observe it, for a longer time with a still mind, you begin to see that it moves. It's not in one place. And you realize the impermanence even in the body. Yes, of course, everything in the body is moving constantly, But it feels very solid, and we identify with it. We think, this is who I am. But no, because what we truly are is truth. We come to the same truth. There are no two different truths. What you learn, what I learn, is the way things are. Breath by breath, moment by moment, we learn about impermanence. We learn about suffering. And we learn about the emptiness of all these conditioned phenomena that we experience, including this body and this mind. We've all had a little bit of peace. Maybe just a few seconds or a moment, like watching a squirrel run across the field. Or maybe looking up at the trees and feeling the power of the way they reach up to the sky. If we don't experience peace, we have to trust that there is peace in this process. Sometimes all we can do is trust one more moment. There is wisdom. We grow in it. When you leave a retreat, what do you tell people? What did you get out of it, sitting there quietly watching your breath? What is revealed through the insight of the mind is invisible to those who have not stopped to investigate. It's an indestructible wealth. You can't buy a meal with it, but you can survive a disaster. At least you can sustain yourself through hardship in life, through challenges, through difficulties that arise, with wisdom and with understanding these Four Noble Truths, giving up, being virtuous through this meditation. These four things are very important because by doing this, we find that island of safety within us, and that's where we can walk. We can rest there. We can feel sheltered by the Dhamma. Even if everything around us seems to be falling apart within the heart, it's nature itself, our true nature. This safe place that we can establish for ourselves is that ethical footprint. We develop it, we perfect it. It's secure, we can trust that. We become so strong, so pure, so true. And we love that. Not only do we love that, but we are that love. That's unconditional. It holds us. We don't have to hold it anymore. Just like in the beginning, when I started to wear the robe, it would fall down. I couldn't hold it up. I would drop it. And then I'd put it back on and fold it again and hold it, keep it on. And now, it's like my skin. It's so precious. I'm never without it because I'm holding my training. And it takes me to that refuge in truth, which will always hold you, always, if you give your life to it.